Good afternoon. It's Mountain Edition. I'm Barbara Platts.
And I'm Allison Bechtesh. Warm fall weather is keeping Independence Pass open longer.
But SkiCo is still preparing for winter by putting scanners on upper mountain lifts.
Plus, pumpkin-flavored beers are on the way out.
And with only 5 days left until Election Day, we dig in deep on ballot questions.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition.
Aspen Word's Winter Word Series starts in January. Last week, the nonprofit announced the lineup. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort reports.
Azar Nafisi begins the annual festival on the 17th. She's the author of Reading Lolita in Tehran. The lineup also includes novelist Kevin Fodarko, Aspen native Pete McBride, and Aspen Summer Words alum Anna Noyes. It's the 20th year of Winter Words. Executive Director Adrienne Brodeur said the lineup focused on bringing in diverse perspectives. All the speakers will present in Pepke Auditorium. Patrick Fort at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Warm fall weather is allowing drivers on Independence Pass past the regular closure date, Elizabeth Stewart-Severy reports.
Officials with the Colorado Department of Transportation say Independence Pass is scheduled to close Monday, November 7th. But if weather permits, it may remain open until the 14th. AspenWeather.net meteorologist Corey Gates says it's likely that Aspen will see small storms with above normal temperatures until the middle of November, which could translate into an extra week for motorists capitalizing on the shortcut to the Front Range. After November 14th, regardless of weather, CDOT crews will need to shift resources to focus on winter operations in other parts of the state. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio News.
Skiers and riders can expect to see new pass scanners on upper mountain lifts at Aspen Highlands this year. Again, Elizabeth Stewart-Severy.
Aspen Skiing Company is investing nearly $250,000 to install turnstile gates at Loge Peak and Cloud 9 lifts. Highlands has seen an influx of uphill traffic in recent years, and some of those people then jump on upper mountain lifts to ski without buying a ticket. Rich Berkeley is vice president of mountain operations at SkiCo.
You need a pass to access a lift, and this is just more of that tracking.
Berkeley says SkiCo plans to install gates at all upper mountain lifts in upcoming years. In addition to assuring that all riders have a ticket, the machines can track what lifts skiers are using and when, which can help identify future improvements. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio News.
Aspen Noyes meets at the Aspen Chapel each week. They sing lots of songs you know and probably some others you don't. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort explains the origin story of this fast-growing Aspen tradition.
Each meeting of Aspen Noyes starts with a quick bit of meditation. The participants sit in a circle and try to be completely in the moment.
We sat in a circle and we started off, we held hands and we did some silent breathing to get ourselves centered.
It was a good meditation. All right, great. Well,
Barbara Lynn Bloomsma has led Aspen Noyes for its entire existence. She remembers going through this process the very first time the group met.
And I played some music and we talked about like how it made us feel. You know, because there are all kinds of different genres of music. So if you have maybe a visual response in your mind or just auditory, or does it take you to a place, or how does it make you feel?
Bloomsma has been leading youth singing groups for years at the Aspen Chapel. But 2 years ago, she was approached to lead a new kind of group, one that she wanted to be as humble as possible. The group came together organically. Today, both teens and adults into their 70s and 80s participate.
It's an art, so how could it ever be wrong? It's creation.
She'd been in environments where she felt music was too rigid. Do it this way, do it that way. She was fed up with the stuffy music world. Each week, she brings about 8 people together to sing and prepare for performances in the Roaring Fork Valley community. They perform at the Aspen Chapel and at other spiritual services.
My goal was to create an opportunity for all different kinds of people to join and to share joy through music.
And that's what she's done. Aspen Noise includes multiple differently abled singers as well as people who have made a living in music.
I didn't even want to call it a choir because I didn't want it to be uptight. I wanted to call it a singing group. And so the kids come, but honestly, the adults come more. We have way more adults than kids.
The group was recently presented an award in Denver for inclusion. Bloomsma says all of that hard work she's invested over the past few years has been worth it.
Well, I was a little bit nervous to make sure I did a good enough job, and I was especially happy and thankful, and I just felt really connected with everybody.
Aspen Noise is currently working on a new set of songs that it will debut soon. Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News.
Basalt's interim town manager will continue to serve until elected officials can find somebody else. Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orm reports.
Basalt has had an interim town manager for about a month, Mayor Jackie Witsit says. His name is Ron Miller, he's from the Front Range, and he once served as Aurora's city manager. He's being paid $75 per hour. The Basalt Town Council will meet next week to discuss the process of selecting his replacement. Then, with the help of a headhunter, as Witsit terms it, she and her fellow council members will go out and find good candidates. Miller is a contractor, so hiring him permanently is off the table. He will, however, continue serving as town manager until a successor is found. When former town manager Mike Scanlon unexpectedly quit in August, Judy Tibbetts took his place briefly. But then she went back to being the assistant town manager and chief financial officer for the town. But her tenure with Basalt could come to a close shortly. She's now a finalist for the town manager position in Frisco, Colorado. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram. Aspen Public Radio, your news, your music, your station.
Now we turn our attention to the elections. Coloradans have 9 statewide ballot initiatives to decide on by Election Day. This fall, Aspen Public Radio is exploring how these measures affect area residents. Reporter Elizabeth Stewart-Severy looks at Amendment U.
Billfield's Ranch sits along Highway 133 just south of Carbondale, extending from the valley floor up into the Thompson Divide. On the mesa, there's a patchwork of Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Forest Service, and private property, much of it even without fences. For about 3 weeks in late May and early June, Fail's cows graze on both his own and some BLM lands, and each year, Fail's pays a property tax on the roughly $50 permit for use of these public lands.
So I get a tax bill for 67 cents.
Not for long if Amendment U passes. It's a complicated question on a daunting ballot. When a private individual or a company uses public lands for profit, it creates a possessory interest, which is then subject to property tax. Amendment U would create an exemption for any interest valued at less than $6,000, like Fails and many other ranchers. The amendment would affect about 5,100 private individuals or companies who pay a total of about $125,000 per year. It averages out to about $24 a year each.
It's just so inefficient. It costs the county much more to collect a 67-cent tax bill than it generates in income. It's just a waste of everybody's time.
In Pitkin County, there are between 15 and 20 accounts that would be affected by Amendment U, according to Larry Fite with the assessor's office.
The taxes on those really are less than the expense associated with printing and mailing and collecting the tax.
This amendment was sponsored by Republican State Senator Randy Baumgartner, whose district includes Garfield County, as well as Democratic State Senator Edward Vigil of Alamosa. Locally, Republicans endorse a yes vote, but Democrats don't. Howard Wallach is chair of the Pitkin County Democrats, and he says it's a matter of principle.
It seems to us that if you collect tax on a loaf of bread or a can of soda or something like that, then we really don't have a principle in effect which says some taxes are too small to collect because we do collect very small amounts.
Taxes on all possessory interests, including big ones like ski areas that use U.S. Forest Service land or sports arenas on state-owned property, bring in a total of about $7 million annually. There are no formal committees lobbying for or against the measure. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy from the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Two former mayors spoke to Aspen Public Radio about interactions they had decades ago with Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Wyatt Orem has the details.
Herman E. Dell served as Aspen's mayor from 1978 to 1982. He recounts a time when Trump was interested in buying a piece of property that included the Continental Inn, what is now the Hyatt.
At that time, the biggest issue in Aspen was the big old hotel, which had served us for so many, many years, was really at that time where it should be torn down and a new hotel be put up. So we were being solicited by people from all over the world, and, you know, it was a big to-do, a lot of people wanting it, a lot of arguing back and forth, but no decision had been made. And certainly I was not involved as far as making the exact decision, except I was involved in whether approving it or not, and the whole city council was. Let me tell you the story.
Please.
I'm at my desk in the city hall, and my secretary calls out to me. She says, Herman, Donald Trump is on the phone. He wants to talk to you. So I get on the phone. I said, hello, Mr. Trump. How are you? What can I do for you, sir? And I told him my name, etc. And he said, we're coming to Aspen to build the new hotel for you. I said, oh, I didn't know any decision had been made. He said, yes, and it's going to be this. And then he goes on how great it's going to be for I don't know how long, a long time. At the end of this long discussion about how great the new hotel is going to be, he says, and once the hotel is over and done and finished, you're going to find that in your pockets are many, many, many shekels.
Are you Jewish, Mr. Dell?
Bet your ass I'm Jewish. So I was mad at him for two reasons. One, that he had to bring in my Jewish faith, which is none of his f***ing business, and for trying to bribe me. Which obviously, he's trying to bribe me. And I said very calmly, Mr. Trump, let me tell you what I'm going to do for you because of your grandiose offer. I want you to bring yourself and all your designers and best workers. I'm going to set it up so you and all your people can sit and meet with city council for maybe up to a half hour. Is that good for you, Mr. Trump? And do you know what he did?
What?
He hung up the phone, and I never heard from him again.
We reached out to the Trump campaign for comment, but they did not respond. The mayor who succeeded Herman E. Dell had a more personal experience with Trump. Bill Sterling served as mayor from 1983 to 1991.
He had just written The Art of the Deal, or let's just say he had his name on it.
The Art of the Deal had been published.
Yeah, it had been published. And my late wife, Catherine, owned Explorer Booksellers. She founded and owned the bookstore. So he wanted to know if he could have a book signing there. So I said, well, do you want to give a talk? Do you want to tell about the book and read from the book? He said, no, I'll just stand at the counter and you be there and introduce me to the people that come through. People were lined up around the block. This was the beginnings of his becoming known. And he would shake hands with the person. I would introduce him and tell him the name. I'd sort of whisper the name to him. And then he would sign the book and have a very brief interaction. And he was very efficient with how he did that. He must have moved. Catherine said it was ironically for her running a literary bookstore. It was the most successful book signing in terms of the number of books sold and the amount of money that came into the store.
What do you feel like he's good at? What's the appeal?
He has a certain flair about him. He's loaded with self-confidence. And he sort of wraps people up in his arms. You know, he's a big man.
Having interacted with him and sort of watching him on the campaign trail, do you see a lot of the same tactics?
I think he's certainly consistent in how he behaves since I first had those encounters with him.
That was former Aspen mayors Bill Sterling and Herman E. Dell speaking with Aspen Public Radio's Wyatt Orem about their experiences with presidential candidate Donald Trump.
Coloradans have 22 presidential contenders to choose from this election. Affiliations include the nutritionist or pacifist parties and several shades of socialism and prohibition. One ticket includes a pair of Coloradans, Frank Atwood and Blake Huber. Allison spoke with the team over Skype about their unlikely presidential bid.
Frank Atwood lives in Littleton, Blake Huber in southeast Denver. They are both libertarians, but this year they are on the presidential ballot under the Approval Voting Party. They say, because of our voting system, there is no way for citizens such as themselves to honestly participate in the election process. But Huber says there's a way around that.
People who voted all their lives will say, oh, I don't have to hold my nose. I can truly express myself.
So, the idea is one little tweak to our nation's voting system of one person, one vote. Instead, it would be one person, one ballot. When you see the list of candidates, the instruction would be not choose one, but choose one or more. This is based on a theory popularized by New York University professor Stephen Brahms. He says there are two benefits to the system, the primary one being that it eliminates a split vote.
If there are three or more candidates, the vote can be divided, and the winner might get far less than a majority and may be quite unpopular. He may or she may be a candidate on the far right or far left.
The second benefit, approval voting, junkies see, is more psychological. It gets rid of the disenfranchisement that has characterized this election series. Atwood turns to the low voter approval numbers of both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump to point out that the public doesn't feel represented when they look at their ballots.
When you're allowed to express your opinion about all of the candidates, you will be less frustrated, less angry, more involved, and a higher level of leadership will evolve.
Okay, so Atwood and Huber know they will not be moving to the White House in January. They are only on the ballot in Colorado. Huber isn't even voting for himself. He's going to stick with the Libertarian ticket. Atwood hasn't decided, but his wife has.
She will not be voting for me.
Their mission is to bring awareness to the system of approval voting. It has a cult-like following. A couple of notable math societies use the system to choose their presidents. Academic departments such as Brahms choose their chairs through approval voting. Even the Pope is chosen through approval voting. Atwood suggests groups of friends give it a try to see how effective it is.
When you're with friends deciding on a restaurant, you're not scared to mention the cute Thai restaurant around the corner. You're not told that you have wasted your vote for a restaurant that has no chance.
I tried this last week for a get-together with coworkers. In order to decide where to go, I sent out two ballots with four dining options. I asked them to first pick just one, and then, with that same list, pick one or more, just to see how the results compare.
First choice, Justice Snow. Second choice,
Justice Snow are all acceptable.
It was a disaster. They didn't understand the system. And that's one of the biggest problems, Huber says, they are up against with approval voting.
Some people just don't get it. And we're trying to figure out why that is.
Brahms also concedes the system is just too foreign to have caught on yet.
Because it's a radically new idea, I think it would take some getting used to.
Brahms has been publishing research on approval voting since the late 70s and has seen time and time again how it could have rewritten American politics. Nader, Nixon, Goldwater, third parties would have placed better and political extremists would have placed lower. Just this year, calculations show that within the 17-person Republican primary field, Trump would have been around 8th place using approval voting, and a strong third-party candidate would have been likely.
Mike Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, considered running for president, but he decided not to run because he thought he would be taking away votes from Hillary Clinton and allow somebody like Donald Trump to win. So I think our system tends to leave out candidates who would be more acceptable to voters than the candidates that we have.
For the pair on Colorado's renegade presidential ticket, they think this state is the place to implement consensus voting. A third of the state's voters are registered independents, and in some ways locked out of the political process. Atwood has consulted with county clerks who have said it would be a cheap and easy switch. Huber says it puts an end to wasted votes.
You know that independent can't win. Well, that's true. We need to change this choose one system to something that includes all of us.
The team knows this campaign trail won't lead to the presidency, but they hope it will lead to a more inclusive democracy.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Barbara Platts. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Also online, you can sign up for Aspen Public Radio's Fork-Fed digital newsletter. Fork-Fed comes out every Friday, updating you on the week's news in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. The Aspen Laugh Festival is bringing in bigger names in response to audience requests. Allison reports.
Wheeler executive producer Jenna Bueller says the Aspen community has enjoyed Laugh Festival over the last 6 years, but they've been itching for more. So she appealed to City Council to up the budget for the winter event.
This community wants bigger names. They love comedy, but we need a little bit more money if we're going to, you know, live up to everyone's standards and their expectations. And I hope that with this lineup this year, we were able to do that.
This year's additional $125,000 allocation from the real estate transfer tax that funds Wheeler programming has allowed for four nights of star headliners. Comedians Whitney Cummings and Margaret Cho, Saturday Night Live veteran Kevin Nealon, and newcomer Adam Devine will all be taking the stage during the event, running February 21st through 25th. The festival commences with a locals open mic night, and other Colorado talent will fill out the opening acts.
A 14-mile stretch of Cattle Creek in Garfield County falls on Colorado's list of impaired rivers. The Roaring Fork Conservancy has been monitoring this stream. Environment reporter Elizabeth Stewart-Severy recently joined the nonprofit to follow the creek from its headwaters on National Forest land to the confluence near Highway 82.
In many ways, Cattle Creek is emblematic of the variety of issues that have surfaced in the Roaring Fork watershed. Chad Rudo has been collecting samples and monitoring Cattle Creek for 2 years. He's clear that there is no one villain polluting this stream.
You know, everybody jointly is impacting the creek. And we're just trying to better understand that.
The headwaters of this mountain stream are pristine, settled in White River National Forest. The Clean Water Act requires that states keep an eye on water quality, and within the National Forest boundary, the creek ranks as, quote, outstanding, and hosts species of native cutthroat trout. But as that water runs through ranch land, residential subdivisions, and commercial areas, state testing shows a decline in the health of populations of aquatic insects called macroinvertebrates, which indicates a drop in water quality. Garfield County is funding the Roaring Fork Conservancy study, which just wrapped up collecting data. Here's Commissioner Tom Jankowski.
Well, I think the number one issue, and it's not one that really can be fixed, is that, you know, a large portion of the water that runs out of the headwaters of that stream is diverted into another basin.
These diversions are largely for agricultural uses, and water starts being pulled from the creek just downstream from the Forest Service boundary.
We're standing by one of the larger diversions in the upper part of the creek.
Rudo from the Conservancy explains that these diversions, including one that fills Spring Park Reservoir near the top of Basalt Mountain, exacerbate downstream pollution. Irrigation ditches pull clean water out of the creek while new contaminants wash in.
We're seeing a lowering of flows, which increases the concentration, but we're also seeing additional pollutants entering as we work our way downstream.
Those pollutants include manure and fertilizers, called, quote, nutrients in water studies, that wash into the stream, especially during peak runoff. And they also include nitrates, which could be from faulty aging septic systems.
There's no smoking gun. We can't pinpoint it on any one land use.
As you drive down Cattle Creek Road, it's easy to see the varied impacts. Up high in Missouri Heights, cattle graze in wide fields, wading through the stream in places. The creek winds toward Highway 82 through ranchettes and residential neighborhoods, with manicured lawns running right up to the riverbank. And finally, it passes through the Cattle Creek commercial area, in spitting distance from construction and storage companies. In many of these areas, humans have largely removed the riparian vegetation that naturally helps to clean up water and protect the stream. All of these impacts mean that there is no easy solution. But Rudo says landowners can allow natural vegetation to grow along the banks and put fences up to keep cattle away from the stream. A primary goal for the study is to identify where exactly the water quality is poor to focus efforts on key spots.
We're hoping that by filling in the gaps with more data, we can actually go back to the state and show, okay, maybe Cattle Creek is still impaired, but the stretch of creek, the reach that's impaired, is much smaller than what they've listed.
Even if that happens, all solutions will not be simple. Diversions that pull water out are managed by water rights, and it's also tough to fix some of the pollutants, like leaky septic systems. Morgan Hill is with Garfield County Environmental Health.
Maintenance of a septic system may not really be an easy thing, because if the system has failed, it can be a significant expense for the homeowner, but it's really important.
Complete analysis of the Roaring Fork Conservancy study is expected in early 2017, and the process to remove sections from the impaired rivers list would likely take more than a year. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy from the Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Seasonal beers have been all the rage in the craft beer world. One fall variation is the pumpkin beer, but that flavor seems to be on the decline. Aspen Public Radio's Patrick Fort reports.
This needs to be a little bit updated.
Dan Sesnowitz is the general manager of Hops Culture in Aspen. Behind the bar, in a large walk-in refrigerator, are all the kegs for the nearly three dozen beers on tap.
That's what should be on. So that's Autumn Maple, that would be Yeti Stout, Sour Blonde by Dry Dock. So
the beer selection at the restaurant changes and shifts with the seasons. Right now, some of the biggest sellers are fall seasonal beers. That's stuff like Oktoberfests and Marzens, lots of the German beers, and another common one is fruit-based.
Generally, we'll only have pumpkin beers late September through early October, and we might have some in bottle.
The pumpkin beer is one of the most divisive beers around. There are people who love their beer tasting like pumpkin pie, or maybe they love when it tastes like real pumpkin. Or perhaps they can't stand the taste regardless. Chase Engel of Roaring Fork Beer Company fits into that last group, but understands the business of it.
It's got a good, strong seasonal appeal to it.
Engel says despite his distaste for the beer, he understands the marketing behind it for brewers. But over the past few years, the rise of pumpkin beer has turned into a little bit of a fall.
You know, everyone's going to go buy a six-pack of it. And maybe the only six-pack of it they buy. And I'm willing to bet in February you can still see pumpkin beers in people's refrigerators.
One of the first home brewing projects Engel embarked on was making a pumpkin beer. It was one of the ones that tastes like pie.
I wound up actually leaving it on a trailhead for someone to take because it was so bad. And that was the first time I ever had pumpkin beer.
Even Dan Sesnowitz at Hops Culture says he's seen a decline in sales.
I think people are exploring some of those older style of craft beers. There's been so much artisanal production. Colorado is a great state for beer that we're seeing a bigger call for those Oktoberfest styles.
Sesnowitz says by next year, sour beers will be the next big thing. He already has a pineapple one on tap. So brewers behind Jolly Pumpkin or the Imperial Pumpkin Porter will find that there's less space for them on the taps at Hops. Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. I'm Allison Bechtesh.
And I'm Barbara Platts. To hear the show again or subscribe to our Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in tomorrow at 3:30 for Valley Roundup. A panel of journalists join News Director Carolyn Zachariasen to provide analysis, insight, and commentary on the week's news.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.